Hello, a very warm welcome to all of you. It's great to have you back. As you know, we are now on chapter 16 of the Bhagavad Gita, which is entitled The Yoga of the Distinction Between the Divine and the Demonic Destinies. Sister Denise has been sharing her understanding of what is contained in the Bhagavad Gita with us, and on your behalf, I bid her a very warm welcome yet again to today's show.
Thank you.
Sister Denise, the title itself is quite a mouthful, and it gives us insight into various aspects of human functioning. What does the title mean to you?
It's interesting. On the one hand, you know, God is teaching that everyone is a soul and they have roles. And on the other hand, you've got good people and bad people. So this is what this chapter is talking about. There are some people who are inherently oriented towards goodness and others who are inherently oriented towards badness, and this is dealing with that. Or you could say everyone has their dark side and their light side, and he's looking at the dark side and the light side that is in everyone. That's another way to look at it.
Sister Denise, I notice in the first few verses the qualities of those born to what is called a divine destiny are set out. Why is it important for us to know what these qualities are? I'm particularly drawn to non-violence in verse 2.
Yeah, it's a very beautiful description of the highest qualities, the virtuous person, the superior human being, which is also referred to in the I Ching, the Chinese Book of Changes, really looking at those two different sides of the human being. And I think what strikes me also is this idea of some people have a divine destiny, and that you're destined to be great. And that is something that comes up time to time here and there, this idea of being destined to be great or destined to be something. Because, you know, people, whether it's within their religion in a formal way or not, most people do believe in destiny, and they feel that, yes, I must live out my destiny, I must fulfill my destiny, but how do I know what that is? So here in book 16, we have this idea of your qualities and your destiny dovetailing. This, I think, is very interesting. You raised the idea of nonviolence, and that is, of course, very, very important. But it's paradoxical, because here you have a warrior who must fight, who's being told to go ahead and kill, and at the same time, you have to be nonviolent. So it's very paradoxical.
I notice that in verse 4, conversely, those who are born to a demoniacal destiny is set out. And it is, I think, set out so that whoever's reading this can look at this and ask themselves, which category do I fall into?
So here you have to really look at yourself. If you aspire to a divine destiny, do you have what it takes? And if you are motivated by all of these negative emotions, negative traits, then you're going to end up with quite a bad destiny. So there is choice, but there also has to be self-observation.
That thought of self-observation, I'd like to take it further in verse 5, which reads, the divine destiny leads to liberation. What does that mean in light of what you just said?
The aim of the religious life of a person within the context of Hinduism and Buddhism is you aspire to nirvana, you aspire to liberation. And if you cannot come out of the wheel of karma, the wheel of birth and rebirth, then you're stuck down here, as it were. So this is really the thing. Do you want to be free? I think freedom is something that most people aspire to. But then what does that mean? There is another description of freedom, which is called Jivan Mukti. So liberation is mukti, liberation from life on earth. But Jivan Mukti is liberation. You are liberated from the bondages of karma, but you're still in the body, you're still on the earth. And then the life of bondage, you're really a slave and you live a life of misery. And who wants that? But if you don't want that, then your behavior has to be really looked at, because you're free to act as you wish, but there are consequences.
Hmm. I do like the note on which verse 5 ends. Do not grieve, Arjuna. You were born to a divine destiny. Again, we see God encouraging Arjuna like he did at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, 15 chapters later. So, Sister Denise, God's role in Arjuna's life is to remind him of his true path, which Arjuna himself has forgotten?
Well, Arjuna is a very righteous and upright man, but he's confused by his situation. Also, he's worried because he doesn't know what's right and what's wrong. He's caught between the ideas that he was raised in, the ideas of Dharma that were handed down through the ages, what I call the conventional morality. And then God comes along and gives him different information. And so he's unclear. And this is why I think God says to him, do not grieve, do not worry, you're okay. Not only you're okay, you're more than okay, you have a divine destiny. So your destiny is greater than you. And this is the thing, the question, can I do anything about my destiny? If my destiny is really great, do I commend myself into the hands of my destiny? If I have a really bad destiny, can I do anything about that? These are unresolved questions, you know.
Yes, Denise, I was surprised at the level of detail as far as the description of both characteristics of the divine and demoniacal characters are given in this chapter. What concerned me is that verse 7 reads, demoniacal men do not understand when to act and when to refrain from action. That, per se, is not, in the 21st century, a sin or illegal or anything of that sort. However, it's written here as a natural law of things. And if one uses this to measure one's own life, I cannot say with 100% certainty that in every part of my life, from the time I was born until now, that I've always known when to act and when not to act. So this standard set here is incredibly high.
It is incredibly high, but then there's a spectrum that you want to look at also. You get into situations, especially if you have a person of a high position. You know, a person of very high position is faced with all sorts of really big challenges on the political scene, the economic scene, whatever. You can see that playing out as you see what's happening in the world today among the world's leaders. Sometimes you have to understand that to do nothing is the right policy, and sometimes you have to do something, so that if you do nothing when you should do something, you cause immense damage. And if you do something when you really would be better to leave it alone, whatever you do will cause damage. So, you know, I think that on the international scene as well as on the individual scene, we're being asked to really be conscious and take full responsibility. And yes, as you rightly said, we do err in those areas quite a bit. But I think that when God says demoniacal people, I think he's really talking about it when it comes to causing a very severe result, that they would be classified as demoniacal.
What I need to know from you now is, can one find authority in this chapter for the fact that all of us contain both divinity and demoniacal attributes? Is that not the case, Sister Denise, that we're all, you know, the Chinese symbol of the yin yang?
Yes.
Aren't we all that? Is there a single person on earth who is either or?
No. So everybody is both.
Yes, everyone is both.
But it depends on how strong you are. I always see that if a person is in their power and they're spiritually well endowed, their dark side will not take over, will not dominate. They will be able to restrain themselves. And throughout the Gita, you hear about self-restraint. And I think that the function of yoga is to give the soul the power that enables the dark side to remain relatively dormant, and the light side, the pure side, to be sustained and to be operational.
Sister Denise, you know, every now and again you'll hear somebody asking the question, why do bad things happen to good people?
Yes.
This one throws people off track greatly, because here's somebody who presents as good and well-liked and life hits him with a serious knock that makes one wince if you're observing the scene of the drama unfold. So how would you answer that question in this context?
Now, we have to see the soul in the context of many, many lifetimes. So at the present time, you're presenting as very good, but there may be an outstanding debt from some other lifetime, and it comes up for payment in the form of bad things happening to good people. This is how we would understand that. We also have to see, you know, somebody may look very good on the surface. Looking good syndrome is quite well known. But whatever is behind that, you don't know because you haven't seen it. But somebody who presents as good may also have a very active dark side that will cause bad things to happen.
I just want to take you back now to what is contained in verse 5 in respect of consequences, now that we're talking about that. The divine destiny, it is said, leads to liberation that we've covered. The demoniacal, to bondage, it is thought. Explain bondage in this context.
Bondage, you see, with the word karma, you have karma bandhan, bondage of karma. And karma is also described as a rope or a thread, and it's like a person is bound in that karmic consequence and cannot get out of it. You have to get through it, you know. There's another point that I could have added to the previous question, and that is that sometimes something bad happening to a good person is a test. And a test of fortitude, a test of what that person is made of, a test of how well that person handles bad things, you see. Because the person who is a student of God, the student of the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita and so on, as a student you will get exams, you will get tests. It could be a matter of health, could be circumstances, it could be character assassination. All these tests must be passed by the person who aspires to be, you know, the enlightened one, the liberated one, the great one. You see, because otherwise there's no proof of your greatness.
You are saying that if you are a Mahatma, in which category our good friend Arjuna falls into, he will be called upon to show his greatness.
Well, he'll have to prove it.
And proving it means that when you're faced with, for example, a war where you have to kill your own relatives, in inverted commas, you'll have to show it to them?
Well, you see, the situation of Arjuna, if you look at it throughout the Mahabharata, throughout the Gita, is again and again and again, there's all kinds of unreasonable things, unfair things happening to him. And because of his dharma, he endures, he gets through it, he accepts to go into exile and so on and so on and so on. And really, you cannot say that a person is a great person unless they have done all of these tests.
Yes, Sister Denise, I notice that verse after verse after verse in this chapter describes what is contained in a demoniacal personality and the consequences thereof. There's a very implicit warning in this, isn't there? Mm-hmm. Tell us about it.
Well, for example, in verse number 8, they say the universe is without God, without a basis, brought about by mutual union. It's just nature and procreation, and there's nothing to do with anything higher or lower. It's just matter, materialism. And I think what we would call conventional science gives us this worldview. And in some people's views, everything is permitted. You know, you have the Book of Crime and Punishment of Dostoevsky, which looks at this question, you know, if there isn't any God, then everything is permitted. And this is how a lot of people operate. And so I think the warning is that if you deny God, if you write God's existence out, and you just say, well, you know, we don't see any need for God, the universe is operating just fine without God, what they're saying is be careful of that view, because you're going to end up performing such action that is the worst possible and with the worst possible consequences. So I think it's a very important chapter to bring into things, and I think this is also why there is a big backlash against secularism. Because secularism is a position that is held in republics, democratic republics. The different countries have this form of governance which is non-theistic. And so this is saying that if you take that position, you run the risk of having a system of morality where you're going to end up in big trouble. So you do get people who are religious minded who would take this type of position and say, we cannot allow ourselves to take on the secular approach.
Okay, next question. I am particularly interested in what is contained in verse 11, line 3, where the demoniacal personality is described, and it reads, with gratification of desire as their highest aim. Which means, I want this, I want it now, I'm going to get it.
Well, isn't it the world we live in now?
Yes.
Live now, pay later, or pay not at all.
Yes, you would look, you have to look for a long time to find somebody who's not like this.
That's right.
Yeah, and the next line, convinced that this is all.
Well, this is materialism. And you see, the materialistic world that we live in is actually headed towards tremendous abuses of human rights, in the name of economic advantage. And if you look at people who are considered, you know, good in this world, it's people who have all the status symbols, who have all the technology. I think it is said something like 1% of the world's population own 90% of the world's wealth. And this imbalance is considered as a matter of great concern, because whenever you have these extreme polarities, that's when things fall apart. And so this is also a warning that you find here at the in the almost last chapter of the Gita, 16th. There's a total of 18 altogether.
I noticed that three particular vices come up, which is contained in verse 21. Sister Denise, I'm not going to go through every single stanza because I don't think it's important. It just describes all the various negative traits that a person with a demoniacal character has. It states in verse 21, "This is the threefold gate of hell, destructive of the self." Very clearly stated, destructive of the self. Desire, anger, and greed. Therefore, one should abandon these three. Lust is mentioned earlier, and now these three vices come up. And verse 22 goes on to state, "Release from these three gates to darkness, Arjuna. A man does what is best for himself, then he goes to the highest goal." So it's clear that if you act under those traits, which one of us doesn't from time to time, then you're literally hell-bent on self-destruction.
Well, this is what we see in the world today. There's a lot of self-destructive people, and there's a lot of people who are totally interested in just gratification. Self-gratification, they don't care about anyone, they don't care about the world. I think some of the arguments raised by the environmental movement is showing that the earth and all of its bounty is being ravaged only for greed, not for need at all. So there are many people who are quite outraged by this. But I think the people who are on the receiving end of all the luxuries and economic advantages and so on will not consider that they are destroying themselves.
I was just going to bring that up, Sister Denise, but you preempted me. You're not aware of, you might be aware that you have these negative traits. And like I said, which one of us hasn't? The only question is, to what degree do I have these negative traits? Not whether I have them at all. And we do not see the vice. We see what we obtain as a result of the vice. And the end justifies the means.
Well, this is the position that many people take. And this is what we call materialism. And of course, it's a total denial of spirituality, of responsibility for the larger picture and so on. But this is the world we live in. It is, according to the Gita, a very demoniacal world.
Okay, and yet it's become our normal, hasn't it?
The new normal.
Yeah. Okay, on that note, Sister Denise, we have to bring today's discussion to an end, but we will continue this conversation further, and we invite you, the viewer, to join us for the next episode of the discussion of Chapter 16 of the Bhagavad Gita, where we'll be looking at what God's message is to us. And I would like to leave you with a thought of using Chapter 16 of the Bhagavad Gita as a mirror to ask yourself, what is my position? Where am I at? And do I fall into somebody who's creating a demonic destiny for myself or a divine destiny? That is the question. It's not an easy question to answer, but if you're interested in the Bhagavad Gita, it's necessary that you answer what is contained in Chapter 16. So I do hope we see you again for a discussion of this very interesting part of this ancient Indian scripture. Sister Denise, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us at home. We hope to see you soon. Take care. Goodbye.
Thank you.